And welcome back, Cindy Dale, with us. Your calls as we talk about trauma, stress, and chronic illness with her book, Energy Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Chronic Illness. What made you write the book, Cindy?
I wanted to write this book for years because I've worked with clients so long. Inevitably, most of the concerns that they can't seem to work through come down to these long-term stressors or trauma. And, you know, I'm a believer in the medical, the science, the biology, but also in the subtle aspects of what's going on. So I, you know, my publisher agreed to let me write the book. And so I did. And I'm really glad that I did it because I think it puts together the science of stress, you know, the polyvagal system and our immune system and our food and eating with that whole less understood subtle science. Like what is going on with the invisible energies that creates challenges?
If people are faced with a psychic vampire, someone who sucks their energy,
yes,
what happens with these areas of trauma, stress, and chronic illness?
Well, it's very common that that happens. And typically that starts in childhood if we have a parent that subconsciously or unconsciously is sort of like stealing, if you would, taking our life energy or you know, some type of our energy, maybe our psychological energy, maybe just our focus. So when we're affected by psychic vampirism, we're going to lose energy, we're going to be exhausted, we're not going to have the electricity running up our body that there needs to be, and so then we're not going to have the electromagnetic field that we need, and you know what, we're going to get sick more often. We're going to be exhausted, we're going to get sick, we're going to be psychologically impaired, you know, stressed out, emotional about it. We can even develop pain disorders and autoimmune disorders because we don't have the subtle and also physical energy we need to stay well.
Well, we have a good way to stay well now, don't we?
We do.
How long does it take every day to tune ourselves up?
I think we need a good half hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you do that right away? Can you do it later in the day? What's the best time?
I spread it out. My habit, in fact, when we're off the phone, I will be at around whatever, you know, early morning. I start my day tuning myself in. I grab my dogs, go in the car, get to the dog park, and let them run. People, I always say I run my dogs, and then people think I'm running. I'm not running. I'm walking. So I start the day outside, breathing good air, being in a good place. And that's actually an hour, but then I do spend another half hour in just like 5 or 10 minute increments as the day goes on, pulling in energy, bringing down that gold light, you know, kind of just keeping myself clean, making sure that I'm whole in my own energy field.
All right, let's go to the calls. Christian's in Ohio, first time caller. Hi, Christian. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention, I had an injury a couple of years ago. It was an airsoft incident where I actually got shot in the eye.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And it turns out that there was a copper BB in the gun instead of a regular plastic pellet. And, well, I'm an Army brat through and through, and my mom's a medic, so I grew up hearing about traumas and how to learn to deal with response.
Sure.
And stuff like that. And I wound up fighting shock for about a half an hour while we got me to the hospital to help take care of the issue. And I was just wondering if that would be considered like a usual response or something like that.
Oh, Christian, that's a great question. Thanks for bringing that up for everybody. When we undergo a serious stress like that, the body automatically puts itself into a trauma state, which means we go into shock. So both biologically, and then I also work with the subtle anatomy, like the chakras and the fields and this and that, both of those anatomies will let us go into shock. And we have to, because the reason for shock is so that we're separated enough from the pain or the incident or our emotions so that we can react in a good way, so that we can save ourselves, so that we can get to help, so that we can help somebody else, etc. So shock isn't a bad thing. Shock is only challenging if we can't get out of shock, which can happen for people psychologically. And sometimes what happens when we have really, really serious or severe intermittent kind of challenges is like there's a part of us that kind of stays in what I call a shock bubble, and then it's always ready to react. You know, like you hear a noise and you react again because it's like the trauma that you went through. How have you been doing since then?
I've had no long-lasting emotional or mental trauma from it. The only anxiety I actually had from it, because like when I got shot, I instantly went blind in my left eye because
of
the blood that filled it. And
why didn't it go into the brain, Christian?
Well, that's actually interesting. So I'm among a small percentage of people that can vibrate their eyes. And the doctors at Children's in Columbus found out that the BB penetrated the muscle and was slowed by the muscle so much that it actually stopped in the center of my eye. So I've retained 80% of my sight because of it.
It's, at this point, you can see 80%?
Yeah.
Good for you.
With my glasses, I'm corrected to 20/25.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's a miracle because the gun was like 30 feet from me. It was at night.
Oh.
We weren't even playing anymore. We were cleaning up. And so, like, that's why I didn't have my glasses on.
Do you ever have nightmares about that?
No, honestly,
none.
I don't. And when I was in the hospital, I told my mom, I said, you know, if it had to be any one of the guys that were there that night, I'd probably pick me again just because I didn't think anyone else there could have dealt with it mentally. Like I did, because the scariest part was having to call my mom at midnight and be like, I got shot in the eye.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and freak your mother out, right?
Let me ask you a dumb question, Christian. When you're shot in the eye like that, is there blood or what else is oozing out of you?
So your eye is filled with the vitreous fluid naturally. When I got shot, it felt like someone poked me in the eye. That was the amount, like, it felt like someone very violently jabbed me in the eye very quickly, and it went dark. There was actually no additional pain, and that might be part of the shock response that she was talking about earlier.
Yeah, probably is.
I went inside, because I was like, I'm blind, and looked in the mirror, and there was a depression in my eye, and I was like, that's not normal. And when my mom came and actually got me, she said that there was some blood around my tear duct that had pooled.
Just amazing.
But they wound up waiting like 4 months before extracting that and filling my eye with an inert gas.
Was there any pain associated with this when it first happened?
No, like I said, I was seeing, it felt like someone jabbed me in the eye really hard.
Like a bad poke.
Yeah, like you could press it on your eye yourself, and you would have an inkling of what it was like. It wasn't excruciating, but it was different, and then that was it. I didn't feel any other additional pain. You know, it could have been my adrenaline, could have been a shock response. I don't know. But
if I were to look at you, would I be able to tell that something happened to your eye?
Under certain circumstances, yes.
Mm-hmm.
If I showed you, I could show you the scar.
Uh-huh.
I still got the scar from when they stitched it up. But if you were looking at me at night, you might be able to tell because my pupil in my left eye is no longer round. It's actually more of a tear shape.
That's what got hit initially, the pupil?
No. So it hit in the globe of my eye, which is the white part.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right.
And when they stitched my eye, it kind of pulled, I guess, my eye a little bit. And so now I've got a little bit of a tear shape to my eye, to my pupil.
I think 20/25 is. Can you wear contacts?
I can, but the problem with that is that now I only have one good eye, and I need to protect the bad eye from any further damage. But I need to make sure that the right eye is also protected from any.
Any injuries, that's your baby.
You have to stay careful.
You don't want to lose that one.
How resilient you were. You did go into shock. That's a natural reaction. But it sounds like you got the right treatment and you had enough support that you didn't end up getting like some kind of traumatic, post-traumatic stress syndrome out of this.
That's just amazing. All right. Thank you, Christian. Appreciate that. We take text and tweets for you, Cindy. Tommy, what do you have for her?
This one in from Laura in New Mexico. My sister is always putting people down. Is this because of low self-esteem? I'd like to know what the guest thinks.
That's a great question. Yeah, there is that old adage, we treat people the way we treat ourselves. So what we're doing inside of ourselves is what we project onto other people. So yeah, that's a way of power. That's a way of getting a sense of confidence and probably making herself feel better by making other people feel less than her. That's a tough habit, and it's really hard to be on the other side of that too. So it helps when we're in the life of somebody like that to keep separating it out and to know she's really talking to herself when she's doing that, not me. So that gives us sort of that protection of compassion, and we don't have to own what's happening, but sometimes you have to react and say, ouch, you know, that hurts, or wow, that really doesn't fit for me. So do some of that type of activity, you know, kind of say a few things like that, not in an angry way, but in a self-protective way, because you don't want to bring that energy in to yourself.
Let's go to Tom in your neck of the woods, St. Paul, Minnesota, on the Wild Card line. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'm afraid I may be a psychic vampire.
Uh-oh.
I've been accused of it many times, and I've been able to suck the life out of an entire room before.
Now, do you know
and
you're doing it?
I actually, when that happens, I feel like an energy surge, and I feel better.
You feel better.
When I'm
that's,
in a bad mood.
That's right.
I've been angry before, and actually electrical stuff has stopped working, and I mean stopped working. Like
wow.
A light bulb will go out, and you can't get that lamp to work ever again. You know, there's nothing wrong with the electrical connections. The light bulb may be burned out. Change the light bulb, and it still won't work.
Have you always had this happening since you were a youngster?
It started happening in the 70s after I almost got hit by lightning. I felt the shock, and then things got weird.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's connected, but, you know, lots of things got weird on the psychic level, and I'm not really the kind of person who wants to get into this sort of thing, but I have friends that are into it, and they look at me and say my aura is wrong, things like that. It just, I don't know what to do. I would like it to stop, because if I'm in a bad mood, I can make everyone else in the room feel bad.
Even worse, you know? Right? Yeah.
Oh, sometimes sick. I mean, a few of them have vomited.
Cindy, what's he do?
Well, this is, you know, first of all, I'm so glad you're owning this, because most people who are truly psychic vampires, they're not going to own it. They're just going to keep doing it. They're not going to want to change it, right? Because you get what you want. I think
you can get a high from it. And
yeah, it probably
that.
Did
hurt
start
anybody.
With almost getting hit by lightning, because our psychic senses are based in our energy centers called chakras, but those are in the physical body. They're located or very connected to the spine and to our endocrine glands. So if you get an influx of electricity like that, your body then goes into shock, and it starts pulling electricity into it. Does that make sense? So you sort of get jolted, and your body flipped into this place of starting to pull energy in from your environment. Whether that be electrical energy, like from light bulbs, or other people's electrical energy. So I think there's sort of this interesting biochemical reason that you do this also, you know, that you're with people. We're all electrical machines. We have electricity coming out of every cell. We produce electricity. That's what keeps us alive. So you're probably pulling people's electrical energy like you were shown how to do, like the shock of getting hit by lightning started. And while you're pulling in their electrical energy, you're also pulling in some of their feelings or some of their this's or some of their that's. You also go two ways, though, because if other people are sensing what you're going through, you're taking energy in and you're getting rid of energy that's your own.
All
so
right.
If you have a bad stomach and other people can feel it, you have a two-way flow going on, not just a one-way. So I would, if I were you, do some meditation, do some regression. I'm actually going to send you a little healing work while we're on the phone, just to be honest. And my stomach feels weird while we're talking.
Really?
Because, yeah. I can feel what I'm doing is going back to that discharge of electricity from the lightning, and I'm just helping the part of you that's stuck in that new pattern out of it, to just kind of process it, to say, I don't need to keep doing this. That was scary. That was hard. I don't want to keep operating this way as an electrical being.
I think it's amazing that he knows he may be a psychic vampire.
Yes, it is. So really, we're just starting the work, Tom, to just say, let's just tell your system you can get out of the pattern that started with that influx of electricity. Think of it, normalize it for yourself. You know, if too much energy comes in, guess what? Then some of our energy has to go out. So you've been in that pattern. We're just working to help undo the first stress that started this pattern for you.
Cindy, in 1978, I lived in Minneapolis for a year.
You did?
I worked at KSTP Television.
Oh, cool. It's a nice little city.
Yeah,
it's still
it's
a nice
gorgeous.
City. It was then, it is now.
Still gets cold in the winter?
It's really cold.
I used to remember we had to plug our cars in to keep the engine block warm.
Yeah, cars are a little better now than they were then, but they can still just stop whenever they feel like it. When, you know, it's 20 below, 40 below with wind chill, you know, there's sort of a macho thing you get out of it. Like, wow, I'm like really cool, literally. So I think you have to trick yourself into liking it in the winter.
Let's go to Perry in Lompoc, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Perry.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm great. And how are you holding up?
We're holding up good here, but I wanted to tell you, George, that, and thank you for asking, George. I've never seen a more positive woman, Cindy, like you are.
Oh, she's upbeat. My gosh.
You just have so much energy, Cindy.
Thank you, Perry. I really like life. I love what I do, which is significant. I love my, you know, my family, my dogs. So thank you. I just take that as a compliment. So like we were saying, you know, I really do kind of work on my energy, you know, a few times a day, because that's a gift I can give other people, is being optimistic, you know, and it's a gift I'm giving to myself. So I appreciate that, Perry.
Perry had just lost his mother. Would you consider the death of a family member trauma or stress? What would you call it?
Well, it depends on what we do with it. It certainly is a stress. Of course it's a stress. And think of it, we were inside of that person. Like, I don't know if there's any more, besides losing a child. I think losing your mom is huge, because that's who carried you. You have your mom's cells in your body. She had your cells in your body, so you're losing a part of yourself. So, Perry, it is a huge stressor, and for a lot of people, it can be a trauma.
Absolutely.
You know, as well.
Cindy, we're going to take a quick break and come back and take some final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Cindy Dale with us with her latest book, Energy Healing for Trauma. She's got about 27-plus books out there, folks. I'm not going to go through the whole list at this time. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Cindy Dale as we talk about her work in the energy healing for trauma, stress, and chronic illness. Of these three areas, Cindy, which is the most prevalent that happens the most?
Well, I mean, just about everything about life is stress, isn't it? So
breathing is stressful.
Yeah, it is stressful. Everything's stress. Like getting up in the morning is stress. Trying to sleep at night is stress. So really, honestly, positive events can be just as stressful to the body as negative events. So we're always stressed. It's more, what do we do with it? How do we know if it's triggering old trauma? What happens if we can't clear it? Then how do we help ourselves get out of the trauma?
Now, waking up in the morning is not stressful for me. You know why? Because I woke up in the morning. I did it. It's something to celebrate, isn't it?
That's it. And that's where attitude makes a difference, doesn't it?
It sure is. Let's go to the phones.
And getting good patterns. I think healthy habits and healthy patterns. Like, I do not get stressed. I normally get up at 4 a.m. and go take my dogs. And we already talked about how cold Minnesota winters are. I'm out there unless it's 40 below. It doesn't stress me in a negative way, because I've shifted my attitude to go, this is fun. This is good for me.
All right, back to the calls. Long Island, New York. Joe's with us east of the Rockies. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. I want to bring up a novel, and then I have a question. There's a novel called A Prayer for Owen Meany, And Owen Meany hits a home run unexpectedly. He's kind of a misfit. It hits the mother of one of the players in the temple. Now, that's at the beginning of the 600-page book. The rest of the book, it's like A Wonderful Life in Reverse, shows how, like, her not being there was how things went wrong. If she had been there with all these different players that she knew, how she would have interjected and kind of set them in a better direction. So it was kind of like the Jimmy Stewart character, but in reverse. She wasn't there. Then around here, there's two things along the lines of what you're saying. People say the sea has, the ocean has negative ions, and they go there to kind of get energy from the negative ions. I've heard of that. Something I just heard of, I was just talking with someone about this topic. They said another thing going on is earthing. People put their, that they walk barefoot on grass, and for 15 minutes, and they say it's called earthing, and it's inspired by someone that walked from England to France barefoot, and how, you know, they had great energy. So I had never heard of this previously, but.
Well, these are great points. I love how you're talking about the Owen Meany, you know, kind of that reverse order, like Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life. Like, everybody's life would have been worse if they were there, but yeah, we don't really know what's good or bad, do we? Like, when something happens, are we better off or are we worse off? We don't always know by what it is that it looks like, at least in the moment. Both water, you know, even lake water, especially moving water in forests, give off negative ions. Really good for you. Over in Japan, they do forest bathing. They don't walk around naked. People have asked me that before. Like, do they just walk around the forest naked? But there's forests where people just walk around, and they're drinking in the negative ions of the forest, and they say that it also helps activate their sixth sense and enables them to do more intuitive decision-making. And earthing's a great technique also. It really is. There's books about it. There's products that help you, like, sleep at night with a blanket that'll give you the same effects. But it's energetic. You know, it's like, get out, touch the ground. We're supposed to operate at about 7.1 cycles per second in our brain. That's the theta brain wave. When we're like that, we're able to be really earthy and physical and also connected more, kind of to our divine self. That's the same sort of measurement as the Schumann's resonance, which is leftover lightning. That's how our body's supposed to be. And the Earth's magnetic field used to give off the same cycle of about, you know, magnetics of 7.1 cycles per second. But now it's lower because of what we've done, because of fracking, because of this, because of that. So a lot of times people are saying it's even more important now to get barefoot and out there so the body can be in this really open and healthy space, you know, flowing in this theta brain state. And you just can't put that much more between us and the Earth because the Earth isn't able to give off as much of that supportive energy as it used to.
All right, next up, let's go to Todd in San Diego. Welcome to the program, Todd. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. What a great topic. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Todd. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. I've been diagnosed with severe PTSD from a trauma event that happened when I was 12 years old. Now, I didn't recall this trauma until 2010, and it came to me as a repressed memory, and it started showing itself in a movie reel, and I was getting bits and pieces of this. And I was sexually abused by a Catholic priest when I was 12.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I had repressed the memories so far back in my mind that until I had some stability in my life, it didn't start showing up.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going insane at first when I started remembering this. And thank goodness I was already in therapy. But I was misdiagnosed because we weren't talking about sexual abuse. We were talking about addiction and chronic homelessness and, you know, and anger, you know, and it shows itself, bipolar shows itself similar to PTSD.
Is that what they thought you had at the time, that you were just bipolar?
Yeah, Yeah, they did. And then so when I started talking about the trauma, the actual trauma, I had a good enough doctor to where he recognized that, and I wasn't bipolar. I had severe PTSD.
How are you doing now, Todd?
I'm back in therapy, and I'm still struggling with addiction, but I have a better outlook on life.
Good.
Gavin Newsom had passed that bill that Jerry Brown vetoed twice. That's going to allow me to go back and sue the Catholic Diocese of Sacramento, where I'm from, for because they had this limited statutations law that was preventing me from going after him after the first bill went through in 2003.
You do what you got to do. You take care of business. In terms of that, Cindy, that's trauma at its worst.
Trauma. And Todd, you're a brave soul to face that. And a lot of times, that kind of sexual abuse or physical abuse, again, we go into shock. And often the memories get held in that place of the shock, so they're not available. Sort of the thinking is, well, then I'm just going to keep going with my life, but we carry it with us wherever we go. And that the ripples of that often are addictions, allergies, mental health stressors, physical illness, but it can come down to something as horrific as what you went through. So I'm personally, not that I, you know, I'm just proud of you that you're facing those memories. That can be a calling, you know, to look at what's been done unto us and to heal through it brings more light into the world. So I'm glad you're in therapy and I'm glad you're helping yourself. And it's a long haul, but it's so worth it to get into that place of, like, knowing that you are pure, no matter what somebody did to you.
How important, Cindy, is it for the individual, like Todd, to recognize what the trauma was? He knows he's got trauma, but he didn't know that he had it.
I think it's really important. When it's, especially when it's something like verbal, you know, strict verbal, horrible verbal, sexual abuse, physical abuse, we need to remember, you know, why think of it, you know, it's like both my kids would go get, you know, fall on the playground or, and this is not to belittle what you're going through, Todd. It's like, this was important for my kids. Like they go through something at school, get a scrape and then come home and cry. They'd tell me about it even when it didn't hurt anymore. They needed, yeah, we need somebody to know. That 12-year-old in you, Todd, needs people to know and needs your adult self to know what you went through. That's, I think, the most important part of the process.
Cindy, spell out your website for everybody, would you please?
Yes, CYNDIDALE.com.
And the book that we're talking about is Energy Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Chronic Illness. But what about your other 27?
Oh, there's a lot of books, aren't there?
Can we still get them?
You can get them. I have links and you know, on my website. They're on Amazon. There's a few that have been retired. You know, that's just what happens in life. You know, you kind of leave some things behind. But most of them are out there.
You got it. Cindy, thanks for being on the program. You take care.
Thank you. You too, George. Thanks to all of you.
Great guest. And I just sometimes you can't realize how many people have undergone just tremendous trauma, stress, and have chronic illness as well. So, folks, just heal yourself, to be sure. Hundreds of years ago, on the bluffs of the Mississippi River in Alton, Illinois, Native Americans etched and painted the Piesaw bird. It's an incredible story. I got an email a couple days ago from someone who said, I haven't heard this from you in years. Would you please give us that rendition again?
Before the village of the Illini, the mighty river swept to the south, clear and fresh, and the surrounding woods were rich with game. The bluffs and the mighty trees shielded the Illini from the harsh winds that sometimes swept in from the north. Their village was secure and a happy place. Chief of the Illini was Watoga. He and his old friends had led his tribe in the ways of peace for most of his life. Watoga and his people loved their home and their way of life. Then one morning, as the sun began to climb towards the summit of its cloudless sky, terror touched the Illini. The village stirred. A number of younger braves were leaving on an early morning fishing expedition. Some were already on the river in their canoes, others preparing to embark, when suddenly, the very earth seemed to shudder with the sound of an alien scream.
Out of the western sky came a gigantic flying monster. Its body was much the size and shape of a horse. Long white fangs stabbed upward from the protruding lower jaw, and flames leaped from its nostrils. Two white deer-like horns angled wickedly from its head. Its huge wings pounded the air with such force the trees bent. Its stubby legs held dagger-like talons, and its spiked tail wound around the grotesque body three times. Almost before the braves realized their danger, the beast, soon to be named the Piesaw bird, swooped across the beach and carried one away. From that moment on, the Illini were terrorized by this incredible and bloodthirsty monster. Each morning and afternoon thereafter, the Piesaw bird came, shattering the peace of the village with its blood-chilling screams and the thunderous beat of its wings. More often than not, it returned to its lair with a victim. The Illini looked to their chief Watoga for a solution to this menace. Time and time again, he had led them through the trials of famine, illness, and the threat of warlike tribes. But Watoga felt helpless before this danger, and the years weighed heavily upon him. The beast seemed invulnerable. His body was covered with scales like a coat of iron. The best efforts of Terahai Anawaka, the arrow maker, and the tribe's finest archers were to no avail. Then Watoga appealed to the Great Spirit. For nearly a full moon, he prayed and fasted. Then in a dream, he found the answer. The body of the Piesaw bird was not protected under the wings. After offering thanks to the Great Spirit, Watoga called the tribe together and devised a plan that could destroy the Piesaw bird. And all that day, Terahai Anawaka sharpened arrows and painted them with poison while the tribe fasted and prayed. That night, Watoga and six of the finest braves crept to the top of the high bluff overlooking the Great Father of Waters. When dawn came, only Watoga was visible, standing straight and firm in the full view. The braves were hidden nearby behind a rock ledge, bows ready. Suddenly, the scream of the Piesaw bird broke the silence, and the winged monster swept into view. Immediately, it sighted Watoga, and with what seemed like a shriek of delight, it pounced as it did. Watoga fell to the ground and grasped the strong roots that grew there. The pain of the talons sinking into his flesh inspired him to grip the roots even more tightly as the Piesaw bird raised its great wings in an effort to carry off its victim. The six braves stepped from their hiding place and shot six poisoned arrows into the unprotected place beneath the beast's wings. Again and again, the bird raised its wings to fly, but Watoga held fast. With each and every time, six poisoned arrows drove into the bird's vulnerable spot. Finally, the poison did its job. With a scream of agony, the Piesaw bird released its hold on Watoga and plunged down the bluff to disappear forever in the swift waters of the great river. Carefully, tenderly, the braves carried Watoga to his teepee, where in time he was nursed back to health. Then a great celebration was held in the camp of the Illini. The next day, the arrow maker mixed paints and, carrying them off to the bluff, painted a picture of the Piesaw bird in tribute to the victory of Watoga and the Illini. Every time an Indian passed that painting, he shot an arrow in salute to the bravery of Watoga and the deliverance from the Piesaw bird.
I believe that's a true story. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.